In the years before marijuana was legalized for personal use in both our states, the people who wanted to grow the non-stoning form of cannabis took pains to refer to it as industrial hemp. Now, hemp is legal to grow, but so is cannabis that gets you high, and the last few years have seen people growing the intoxicating versions and claiming they're growing hemp. We'll try to unsnarl the situation in this month's edition of Stories of Southern Oregon. Stories of Southern Oregon are compiled by Maureen Flanagan Battistella for the Southern Oregon Digital Archive, SODA, at the Hannon Library at Southern Oregon University. Maureen Flanagan Battistella, welcome back to the studio.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Always good to have you. This month, Maureen returns with two people. Well, we hope. We have one already. Who know hemp and work with people to grow it and grow it better. We have Dr. Govinda Shrestha, we're waiting to arrive, hemp and pest management specialist, not here yet, from the Southern Oregon Research and Extension Center, SOREC. But we do have Dr. Gordon Jones, a soil specialist, also from SOREC, in the studio with us. Dr. Jones, thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Jeffrey. Thanks for having me.
Talk about your particular level of expertise, area of expertise, and how that relates to hemp.
Sure. I have a general agriculture appointment here in Southern Oregon. I serve Jackson and Josephine counties for the Oregon State University Extension Service. It's a general agriculture appointment, meaning that I work with pear growers and wine grapes, pastures and forages, and I've been here since 2017, and so have seen some of the dramatic rise in the hemp industry, and as that became a major crop in this region, it became clear that I needed to pay some attention to those growers and try to provide whatever support I could.
Boy, 2017 was a heck of a year to arrive, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Considering all that.
Yep, it was the beginning of the ramp up in terms of a real industry in terms of hemp here.
Well, that's a pretty amazing window, just generally, not just for hemp, but I mean, when you look at the changes that have come about to the pear business, for example, because of the ongoing drought and the numbers of acres of pear trees that have been taken out of production, and lots of stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. As I was wrapping up grad school in Virginia, thinking about what I would be working on here in Oregon, was thinking about pears and wine grapes and knew that there are a different set of climate and agricultural challenges to deal with. But between some significant droughts, a wildfire, and this real explosion in hemp, it's been quite a it's kept me busy and well interested.
Yeah, the explosion in hemp, come to think of it, it was, the second or third year you were here, I guess, when Jackson County exceeded the rest of the state in acres planted in hemp?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that was 2019, after the federal legalization with the passing of the Farm Bill in December of 2018, federally legalized hemp production, and we saw a explosion in use, that there were, I won't get these numbers quite right, but about 64,000 acres of hemp registered across the state in that year. And I think 40% or more of those acres were down here in the Rogue Valley, Jackson and Josephine counties. Mm. I have never seen a change in land use so rapid, and I'm not sure I will ever again, given the sort of regulated nature of that crop and the amount of enthusiasm that we saw in 2019.
So that was a boom. I mean, was there a bust afterward?
We have definitely seen a major decline in acreage. So after those 64,000 acres that were planted statewide in 2019, in 2020 there were about 27,000 acres, and last year there were about 8,000 acres. And I think we'll do all right this year if we get 4,000 or 5,000 acres statewide. And so it has been a rapid up and a rapid down, and a number of reasons for that we can get into.
Well, so let's talk about the major one. I mean, obviously overproduction would seem to be part of that, that when everybody got into the game at once, they had to realize, oh, wait, there might be too much of this.
Yes, right. The one thing we're supposed to learn from a microeconomics class is that the laws of supply and demand are what drive prices for products. And as one of my colleagues at the research center says, that farmers can be particularly good at ruining a good thing. We watch our neighbor do something in one year and make some good money doing that, and then everyone turns to that, and we can pretty easily outstrip the demand by growing this crop. And
that's a question I have. It seems like market demand has to drive agricultural production. What happened here? What happened to the market?
Yeah, I think that's a good question, in that the hemp regulation and the use of hemp products and the claims that you're allowed to make about hemp and its the associated cannabinoids are still regulated in a little bit of a sort of like cloudy gray area. And so there's some hesitancy from some big corporations to take on use of hemp materials and cannabinoids. There is increasingly good science about the medical or therapeutic benefits of hemp, but just the nature of how it is regulated and the notion that things differ from in terms of use of those cannabinoids and products from state to state yields some hesitancy from folks who may be potentially big buyers in the future.
So growers were growing without having a market, a known market for their product.
Exactly. And that is a challenge that in doing that kind of speculation can be an appropriate way of thinking about a crop. But when you're starting in at the beginning of a season without knowing where that crop will be sold, you have some level of risk that you may do really well. If there are a bunch of buyers that appear at the end of the season, could do well. But you also are at the risk, because we know that everyone will be harvesting at that same time of the year. And we go from relatively little hemp on the market in August and September, and as the end of September and October approaches, basically everyone is harvesting and drying their crop and is looking to where do I sell this. And at that sort of moment in that seasonal cycle, saw a real decline in prices and some real challenges in 2019 with lots of crop unable to be sold.
Mm. Dr. Gordon Jones, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange in this month's edition of Stories of Southern Oregon. Maureen Flanagan Battistella back with us as well. We're talking about hemp and the hemp industry in the region and more broadly as well. But boy, it grows well here. And we've been talking about some of the recent history. You can join in the conversation with your questions and comments by phone at 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. It gets confusing for the general public. And I know, having talked to the folks at OLCC in the last couple of years about the stuff that was getting grown, claiming to be hemp, that was actually the more higher THC versions of cannabis. And it looks exactly the same to the casual observer and even to the non-casual, I guess. Does it get confusing even for scientists like yourself to try to figure out what's what and who's claiming what?
Oh, yes, it is. It is certainly a complicated scene to try to understand the landscape. And it is both science that we work in, but we also work in outreach and education. And so we can ask pretty like targeted, narrow, and simplified science questions. But when it comes to answering the phone when somebody has called trying to understand what their neighbor is doing or who to lease their land to, there is real complexity. And as you say, you cannot tell this plant from the roadside, plant in hand. It has to go through an analytical process to determine the content of THC in order to understand, is this hemp or is this marijuana? And it's been regulated in Oregon by different shops, where OLCC has handled the marijuana, the high THC side of the regulation. Oregon Department of Agriculture, an entirely different sort of like branch of our state government, has regulated hemp. And so I think there's a little bit of evidence that perhaps in that exercise a little bit has fallen through the gaps. Or if you don't work with OLCC and don't work with ODA and you have no license at all, who is responsible for that enforcement? And some of that has certainly gotten figured out in the past year.
Yeah, in this year. Yep.
And but prior to that, there were some loopholes, and I think some folks headed for nefarious intentions saw those loopholes and made use of them, unfortunately.
Yeah, there was a lot of that, and I know every politician seemed to be running around saying hoop houses last year, because that's what we were seeing a lot of. These are the structures that people put up to give a, it's like a temporary hothouse for the hemp, isn't it, or the marijuana?
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure why the hoop houses went up, but it was early last spring, maybe like March or April, that we saw all these hoop houses going up that looked like they were pretty quickly constructed, 2x4s and PVC and sheet plastic, and sort of had a look about them that were unusual. And I sort of felt like I missed the memo. Nobody like told me this was the plan for 2021 to build all these hoop houses was different than we had seen hemp production in the past. And through some conversations with the Department of Agriculture's hemp program and with our Jackson County Sheriff, became clear that no, those were not probably not hemp grows, and no, they were not legal marijuana grows, but we're in that we're in that sort of illicit space in between the two crops. And was sort of alarming. The folks who were here, sort of everyone saw those. They were everywhere. See them from I-5 and from your bedroom window in many cases.
And I know people complain about the skunkiness. Is the smell different at all between hemp and the higher THC?
Yeah, it is. It is not, or it may be, but not for that reason. That there are terpenes are the class of compounds in cannabis broadly, and they can have a range of aromas from sort of skunky, as you described, to smelling like a pine tree, to sort of being citrusy in a range of aromas. And those are same set of aromas can appear in both hemp and marijuana, and are not necessarily distinguishing factors.
Hemp, the topic here on Stories of Southern Oregon on the Jefferson Exchange. Maureen Flanagan Battistella, the compiler of stories, in the studio with me once again, as is Dr. Gordon Jones from the Southern Oregon Research and Extension Center, an expert on soils. And you can join our conversation on the Exchange by phone. It's 800-838-3760, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Bill in Sutherland dropped off his question, and he says the way they raise the crop in Douglas County involves de-weed, cover, and drip irrigation. After the harvest, all the plastic goes in the landfill. Is it that great if it causes this kind of pollution waste? Thanks for that question, Bill. Not the first person to talk about the amount of plastic that seems to be involved in industrial hemp.
Yeah, that has tended to be the pattern that we've seen over the past few years of using what I would call plastic culture or sheet mulch, plastic mulch to control weeds, and is not a... it's not a strategy that is unique to hemp, that we would see this in strawberry production here in the valley and other produce crops. Tends to be relatively high-value crops that are grown that way. Yes, and it produces quite a bit of plastic and is a real challenge that, let's see, about... I did a little bit of back-of-the-envelope math here at some point. I think this was probably 2020 when we were seeing all of that across the landscape. On the order of 100 or 200 pounds of plastic go out across an acre.
Wow.
And that is just that sheet plastic covering the rows. I did not include that drip tape in my calculation.
Wow.
And you start with reasonably low-value plastic to use for that plastic mulch. And when you pull it out of the field, even with best efforts, you will bring... in addition to that 100 or 200 pounds of plastic, several hundred pounds of soil. And so now you have this contaminated, low-value plastic that if we were going to recycle it, would need to be washed free of that soil, and then is already relatively low-value plastic that doesn't have that much value in the recycling system.
I remember when we started working on this idea of plastic in the landscape, we wrote a couple of articles about it, didn't we? And you brought up at that time compostable plastic and different sorts of organic materials that could be used in place of plastic. How's that going?
There are a few products that are sold as biodegradable. There are increasingly a few like national and international standards that can sort of standardize that the degradability, decompostability of plastic. There is some of that being used, and it does biodegrade pretty well over the course of a few seasons, will really disappear into the soil. But it runs a pretty wide gamut from actually decomposing properly to just breaking down into fragments. I believe that currently there are no products that are allowed under the USDA organic standard for biodegradable plastic. And not that every hemp grower is USDA organic, but is...
are there any? I know that.
Are there any organic hemp growers?
Yeah.
Yes, that there is. There are certified organic hemp growers. Most of the practices with weed control and insects and diseases that would require use of pesticides, that growers are of hemp are only permitted to use a relatively narrow list of pesticides, and that's a list that is provisioned by the Oregon Department of Agriculture and mirrors pretty well what is allowed in organic production.
Okay.
There hasn't been that much time to test these sort of more conventional agrochemicals on hemp, and so have not been labeled for use like that to a great degree.
Let's take another phone call here. Helga in Talent is on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about hemp on Stories of Southern Oregon with Dr. Gordon Jones.
Hi. I know there are other uses of the fiber that is in hemp, and of course, those industries have been shipped overseas, you know, making paper or... textiles. I've had some clothes made out of hemp as a textile, and it's a great textile. So it would be good to have more of that developed here nationally instead of sending the equipment abroad and not having that available as an end product.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks for the question and then the comments there, Helga. And I do remember, the restrictions on industrial hemp were so great a few years ago that, you had to have your seeds sterilized before they crossed the U.S. border and shipments, all that kind of stuff. So that has all changed greatly, but have the markets developed for the end products that hemp could potentially be used for other than for CBD?
Right.
Yeah, there is still work to be done on those other markets for hemp, particularly in Oregon, that hemp does produce a desirable fiber for textiles. Like historically, it was used for rope in the maritime industry. The word canvas has a lot etymologically to do with the word cannabis. And we don't see those markets today. That statistics that I see, both sort of proper statistics and hearsay, range from there are 0 acres of fiber hemp actually being grown in Oregon other than in experimental plots to there are just a couple hundred. I'm not aware of any fiber processing facilities. And
in Oregon or generally?
In Oregon. And there are a few elsewhere in the United States that have developed in the past several years. It is a sort of fair question. There are some challenges about potential conflict between the grain and fiber industries and the CBD or flower industry that we see here. That in order for to achieve high CBD yields or desirable hemp flower, it needs to be free from seeds, and that means we need to not have pollen in the air. In order to keep that a high-quality product. And there's a concern from those flower growers and growers of CBD oil that if we started to grow a lot of fiber or seed in this part of the world, the seed growers that are growing for grain need that pollination to occur, and those seeds contain oil and protein that is desirable. But if you're growing for smokable flower, need that to be free from seeds. And so have some sort of like counter objectives in terms of the biology of the plant and the target product. And so I think there's some hesitancy on planting out a lot of fiber hemp in the Rogue Valley for that concern of cross-contamination and degrading the value of your neighbor's crop.
Interesting. So splits just within the people, the different uses for the plant itself, which already exist, but some real separation in exactly how they want the cultivation to occur, which brings us back to a real root question I haven't asked yet, which is what is it about this climate and these soils that make this place so great for growing the cannabis plant?
Yeah, that's a good question, and I don't know if I have like a really good answer for it. That as I learned a little bit more about the industry in the West, learn about the Emerald Triangle that stretches through Northern California, and I'm not sure if I could even list you the corners of it. I jokingly say that like we're like the tip of the Emerald Pentagon or something here in the Rogue Valley. And we do. We have got a desirable climate, our sort of like Mediterranean system with dry summers where you can plant a hemp crop in most years and it won't necessarily get rained on at all until harvest is desirable for those high quality flowers. Something about our hot days and cool nights seems to be related to being able to produce high contents of cannabinoids. See some like sort of hearsay literature that indicate that here in Oregon, the same hemp plant that's grown elsewhere in the country might have double the cannabinoid content or 1.5 times the cannabinoid content. And exactly why that is, I suspect is primarily climate related, but
is that true?
It is the only information that I have. I do not know. It comes from a university colleague, but is hearsay. So nonetheless, I don't know that they have. I've seen like really good side by side data at this point. Though that is coming. That we're working on some trials, same varieties, same planting practices, spread across the country to try to answer just that question.
And that's actually something I'm really interested in. I know that you work closely with colleagues in other states. Colorado, for example, is a big one. What's going on with this cross-state collaboration?
Oh, there is lots of it. Lots of our agricultural or land grant universities, like Oregon State University, have been quite interested in hemp, even if they're in locations that are not historically hemp or cannabis producing ones.
They're not the global innovative center that we have.
Exactly. And that Oregon and the university has taken a good lead and does provide leadership in terms of supporting these, just mentioned these variety trials across multiple states. Those were originated out of colleagues on campus in Corvallis. Recently, or I guess last fall, got a relatively large $10 million USDA grant that was authored by our associate director of the Global Hemp Innovation Center and is leading to collaboration between Oregon, Washington, California, and Nevada about thinking about the future of the hemp industry, developing some of these other markets like fiber and seed, and sort of pushing for collaboration among those institutions. And so,
not Colorado.
We had aimed that at the west and really at like the I-97 corridor that runs to the east of the Cascades, trying to serve what is like a slightly less served set of constituents than the I-5 corridor.
Got it.
But do have collaborations with folks in Colorado as well as the east and the northeast as well.
We have an email from Talent from Marion. Talent writes, "I know a quick way to test hemp for THC." I think I understand what's being said there, but also says OSU needs to advise our state policymakers to outlaw agricultural, in quotes, agricultural plastic.
Yeah, that's an interesting question that we at Oregon State would try to provide good science on the pros and cons of various agricultural practices that. There are certainly pros and cons, like we've described, can provide good weed control, but yields this issue with garbage headed to the landfill.
100 to 200 pounds of plastic per acre. That's an amazing number you gave us.
Yeah. And I guess I suspect that if we were to talk about alternative strategies for weed management, if we were to say, for whatever reason, somebody wanted to outlaw plastic, folks would be asking questions about, can we use herbicides on hemp? And I trust there are folks listening today that would say, no, we don't want more herbicides in the environment. And we'd say, well, there are pros and cons to those approaches. And just ends up being the case that there are pros and cons to each practice we choose.
Just a few seconds left. Any final questions from you?
No, Maureen? Thank you so much for caring for our land and for educating so many of our people. Thank you, and for
putting up with what must be a very complicated process at this point, trying to figure out, help people understand what hemp is, industrial hemp versus the stoner kinds of cannabis, and a lot of competition there between those.
Yeah, absolutely. We are happy to help and want to be able to try to help chart a clear path forward, answer folks' questions, be them neighbors or other folks just driving down the road, encourage folks to reach out to us at the Extension Center and when you've got questions on these topics.
Dr. Gordon Jones is a soil specialist with the Southern Oregon Research and Extension Center.